is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
And welcome to it on this Thursday. It's a bit wet out there. Highs, I think it'd be about 60 today. For tomorrow, for the Earth Day barbecue celebration, which you are invited to. It's happening in Okemos, Michigan. If you can make the trek, no matter how far away you are in the state, you'll be welcome to join us. Specials on ribs and chicken on the grill. Some Earth Day specials like the Chicken Little. I don't know what that cocktail is going to look like. Hurricanes, they're definitely on the cocktail special list. Come join us. We're going to celebrate Earth Day the way it should be celebrated, by celebrating the bounty of all the great things this earth gives us, much of it right here in Michigan. I'm sorry, I'm not too concerned about Chicken Little. The sky is not falling. I feel pretty good about things. So tomorrow, Okemos, Michigan, Gilbert and Blake's is the name of the place. You can find it on the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page. Tune up the Harley. Bring the biggest gas-guzzling SUV you can find. Maybe a classic car. That would be nice. And tool on over to Okemos. We'll shake hands. We'll talk, and we'll just have a good time. Our next guest, Congressman Tim Walberg, joining us on the line. Congressman, welcome aboard.
Good to be with you.
Well, you know, and I bring up Earth Day for another reason, because tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, Congressman, there'll be a big ceremony in New York implementing what I think is a treaty. It can be called whatever you want to call it, but I believe it's a treaty involving the United States and countries from around the world on these Paris Accords that will, I think, be very detrimental to the United States. It'll cause energy poverty because it'll create pricing that'll hurt people at the lower income levels the worst of all. What do you make of it?
Well, you're right. As we move forward, letting the rest of the world take the lead as opposed to leading ourselves, as we have in the past, it always diminishes what America can achieve and what we experience, and really doesn't necessarily help the rest of the world. They need the same things that we've enjoyed here in the United States. That's use of natural resources in a good stewardship way. We've provided jobs and opportunities. We've provided energy that has, you know, powered our plants and our computers. We've had clean air and clean water impact that continues to develop without going to excess, that ends up hurting our people. And so when you have an administration like we've had for the past now going into 7.5 years, that has tried to move us backwards, this is what we get. But the rest of America, I think, certainly where you and I live, in the flyover zone, I think has a bit of sense of reality, of understanding, yes, we are stewards, let's be good stewards, but let's use the resources appropriately that makes our lives good and prosperous for the future.
As you look at, you know, obviously with Michigan being a focal point of where coal-fired power plants are being closed down, 7, 8, 9 this month being shut in Michigan. By 2020, another 20 coal-fired power plants will be shut down in Michigan, taking a fairly significant amount of power out of the grid. You know, I've read where brownouts, rolling brownouts, possibly blackouts could become a possibility, certainly if there's any problem with any of the remaining power plants. I mean, to me, this just seems like a fool's errand. Why would we pursue a policy that we're shutting down plants before we have enough infrastructure in place to replace the power that's being lost?
Well, it's hard to expand on what you've said. The question is why? Why? What have we done so poorly? And what danger have we produced so significantly that we have to take this step? And who is pushing it? You know, George Washington told a person about America, said, here the people rule. Well, what's happened? The majority of people don't believe that way. They want clean air, clean water. We don't want to destroy our resources, but we also understand we have to use them. And when you see what's the choice, are we going to go to just renewable fuels, or are we going to use natural gas? We have people already protesting against the production of natural gas through fracking, etc. So where does it stop? Windmills, great. Solar, great, where they work. But they won't light up our electrodes in our blast furnaces that produce the steel that we enjoy so much on our vehicles, and construction issues, and doing lots of good benefit for our country. So I guess the question is why? And I can't give you that answer because I don't believe that way.
Yeah. It makes me wonder. We don't build anything here in America anymore, it doesn't seem to me. Not like we used to, anyhow. And I remember reading articles in the newspapers when I was a kid growing up about robotics and how it was going to displace workers by the thousands. And it was dismissed by big companies and so forth. But that really is exactly what happened. A lot of jobs have been taken by robotics, by automation, by computers. And so how do you compete? How do you have enough? I mean, I've seen other predictions that, you know, tens of millions of more people will be without jobs as a result of electronics and technology and so forth going forward. What do you do with all the folks that don't have jobs or good jobs? I mean, if they're marginalized by computers and machines, how do you rectify that?
Well, again, I think we build the economy based upon employing people and expanding our production capabilities. I held a jobs fair on Monday of this week, and the common concern there of employers, over 40 employers or agencies, temp agencies, et cetera, that were there, truck driving schools, you name it, are trying to find people who are prepared, trained, ready to do the work, and, of course, will show up the second, third, fourth day and pass the drug test.
Yeah, that's important.
But we have a problem there. We have a lot of jobs available. But sadly, Steve, you and I both know that for years we walked away from training people for the skilled trades. For some reason, that became a secondary market for employable people, and we wanted to push everybody through a four-year college or university institution. Now, those are great, but that's not for everybody, and we need people who can produce things, and the skilled trades is a place that a good number of people, if given the opportunity, will see as a sweet spot, like my father, a machinist and tool and die maker for many, many years, loved the work and produced things. And we have young people that, if given that opportunity and incentive and encouragement, will find a great life in the trades, in producing things, in manufacturing, STEM issues, advanced manufacturing, etc. So I think we have to redouble our efforts more so, Steve, in pointing out that America is a producing nation. It's in our DNA. We need people to do that. And so let's train people to do that and give
and
them
I agree.
Not only skills, but the respect.
Yeah, and we have to get people off. I also think that we need to remove government from the student loan business, but that's a story for a different day, because when 99% of your student loans are controlled by the federal government, you're basically putting your young people on the hook to the government from day one, and I don't think that's a good idea, Congressman. But
mortgage
maybe
their future.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Mortgaging their future to its own government is the problem. Congressman, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Congressman Tim Walberg, everybody, right here on the Steve Gruber Show. The hotline's open, 888-900-9966.
The Steve Gruber Show, American values with Midwestern common sense.
Say you want a revolution, well, you know.
Welcome back to the program. It's Thursday. The job shadow here, Daniel just asked me. He said, Andrew Jackson, was he, you know, that important? Well, he was a war hero to some back then, the seventh president of the United States. But what he did, he was the first guy elected president that wasn't part of the elite inner circle. That's a fact. See, he was from Tennessee. And he ran once and lost, and he came back and beat him in the Electoral College, beating John Quincy Adams, John Adams' son. For a second, he didn't get a second term. Andrew Jackson. So Andrew Jackson, the first guy, the first real guy, the first guy out there, if you will, from the rest of the country that became president. So he's kind of significant. He was a slave owner, which is one of the knocks on him by people today. But you have to remember that, you know, put it in the context of the times. He was a slave owner when slave owning was legal, and I don't know what his extent was. So you'll have Harriet Tubman on the front of the $20 bill, and Andrew Jackson will be relegated to the back of the bill, but, you know, so it is. I do have some good news. So pay attention, Daniel. I have some good news for those folks that are threatening to leave the country when Donald Trump is elected president. Those threatening to leave the country when Donald Trump is elected president. I have some good news. You can go to Canada and you can just smoke weed all day. Yeah, you can just go up there and just get the bong, get some rolling papers, spin them up, spark the fatty, nail the blunt, the whole deal. I'm not kidding you. You just smoke the ganj. Here's why. Canada's health minister has now told the United Nations in a special session of the General Assembly, where Taco Bell was served for lunch in New York, that federal legislation to legalize marijuana altogether will be ready next year. Let's go ahead and hear more about it. It's clip 9. Go.
For more than 3 years, they promised to legalize marijuana, and yet thousands and thousands of Canadians will have criminal records for the rest of their lives because they won't even decriminalize something that could have been done overnight. So the simple question for the Prime Minister is this. His minister was in New York, of all places, instead of here today, announcing that maybe in 2017, they'll be presenting legislation to finally do something about it. In the meantime, will the Prime Minister at least promise that there will be legislation to remove the criminal record?
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
I'm always curious to see what position the member of the from Outremont will have on marijuana any given time he stands up in this House. The fact of the matter is, we have been clear. We believe in legalization and regulation of marijuana because it protects our kids and keeps money out of the pockets of criminal organizations and street gangs. The fact of the matter is, decriminalization, as this member proposes, actually gives a legal stream of income to criminal organizations. That's not what anyone wants in this country.
Gee. It sounds like he needs to get high and chill out. He's a little fired up there, you know. Check it out, dude. Gonna have myself a little doobie for lunch, eh? Oh, yeah, Stevie. Have a little doobie. Yeah, go to Canada, eh? That's my theory. Anyhow, I thought I'd share that with you, that for those like Alec Baldwin or George Clooney or Cher that are planning to leave the country when Donald Trump is elected, at least they can go to Canada, get high, and have a good time, I suppose. Speaking of Donald Trump, Trump called his victory in New York incredible, but was not surprised that he did so well in the state's primary election. He had a chance to reflect on it yesterday. It's clip 6. Go.
So we had a great night last night in New York. The people of New York were amazing. They were amazing, and I thought they would be, but you never really know. And then I started getting these phenomenal polls, and everyone said, you're going to win way over 50%. One of the reasons that New York gave me such an incredible vote, a vote far beyond what the polls said, and I wasn't surprised. When you look, the vote was incredible. It was record-setting, and it's New York. And you know what is nice, I have to say? The place that knows me best gives us that kind of whatever. You know, it's really nice. They know me. They know the good, the bad. They know everything. They know me. And they give. And they're tough. They're tough. Like you. They're tough. And we had a great evening. Really a great evening. It was an amazing evening.
It was a big night. Now, Ted Cruz, for the most part, is now mathematically eliminated from getting the 1,237 delegates needed to nominate in Cleveland. I mean, that's pretty well where we are on this. Donald Trump may or may not make it. If he doesn't make it, he will come just short. But remember this. There are a lot of free radicals out there, the unattached delegates. I call them free radicals just because of chemistry class, but you'll have delegates that are not otherwise associated with a candidate, and therefore they could align with Trump on the first ballot. There are some from Western states where Ted Cruz swept delegates and people there saying, well, you know, that's not quite right. Ted Cruz, though, not giving up quite yet. Clip 7, go.
You may have heard there was an election yesterday. And as the media are breathlessly reporting, Donald Trump won his home state. Truly a remarkable achievement. Upon winning his home state, Donald, with a characteristic display of humility, declared, "This race is over. Manhattan has spoken. And if the rest of the voters would quietly go home now and allow him to give the general election to Hillary, all would be better."
Again, I come back to the fact that, you know, a lot of people telling you, well, Donald Trump cannot beat Hillary Clinton. Well, you know, just let me point out to you, these are the same folks that told you last year Donald Trump could not possibly be the Republican nominee for president. It's not even possible, they said in June. And then they said it in July, and then August and September and on into the fall and then the spring. And then they said, well, you know, he can't possibly continue to win. He picked up 61% of the vote in New York. Newsflash, he hasn't even turned his sights on Hillary yet. How much dirt do you think he has on her? It's going to be a fun summer. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a Thursday. All right, welcome back to it on a Thursday. You know, there are these notions that somehow the economy is in great shape. And I'm sorry, I'm a skeptic. I mean, I can do well, unlike a lot of folks. I can still do basic math. And what I mean by that is I know that there are a record number of people not participating in the job force right now that are able-bodied working age Americans, about 85 or 90 million, are not even participating in the economy right now, don't have jobs, not looking, have given up. And yet, I am supposed to believe that the unemployment rate is 4.9%. I don't. I know better than that. If 85 million Americans are not working or looking for work, then the actual unemployment rate has to be higher than that in my estimation. But when in doubt, bring an expert in to talk about labor force gains. Are they real? Are they not real? My next guest, Don Grimes, a senior research specialist at the University of Michigan's Institute for Research on Labor, Employment, and the Economy. Don, welcome to the program.
You're welcome.
Okay. Tell me about the labor force gains in Michigan. Should I take them seriously? Where is the Michigan economy today as we speak?
Well, I would say that the Michigan economy is doing, if not great, then I would have to say very good, somewhere in the B-plus range, right? Maybe, or an A-minus. I mean, it's doing about as well as it can be doing. As you noted, the unemployment rate is 4.9%. Now, both in Michigan and around the country, a lot of people have dropped out of the labor force, as you have noticed. I mean, if you look at the long-run history, the past few months, there's a little bit of a screw-up in the labor force data in Michigan, which shows some unreasonably high gains in number of people who are say they're employed. It's a data problem. But despite the fact that it's overstated in the last 3 months, looking at the numbers, I believe, to be a good count, things are really doing quite well.
Now, if you look, and I'm going to hold you accountable to this, because the way that we measure unemployment in America was changed in the 1990s by Bill Clinton. Prior to that, we used a number called a U6 number. That also counted people.
That's not correct.
Actually, it is correct.
No, it's not. I'm telling you.
Well, then I guess Bernie Sanders is lying to me. Go on.
The way the unemployment rate has been counted in this country has been the same probably for 50 years. Essentially, there have been some minor tinkering with it, the methodology, but it's fundamentally a survey question that is prepared by the Census Bureau. Every month they survey 50,000 households, and every month they ask people if they're employed, or if they say they're not employed, then they dig deeper to find out if they're seeking
a job and are available for a job. If they are both actively looking for employment and are available for employment, then they're counted as unemployed. And that has been the same metric for years. In fact, that's why they've continued this metric. Now, what has happened is a lot of people have said that they're no longer looking for work, particularly older males and young people, actually, who used to seek employment. And now they, when they're asked if they're looking for work, they say, nope, they're going to school for the most part and not seeking even sort of a part-time job if they're unemployed. So there has been a change in how people respond to the questions, but basically the questions are the same and have been for 50 years.
Well, that's not true according to numerous sources on the Internet, and I let you have your say
Let me go look at the actual
I mean, you can cut me off all you
data,
want.
Not some I mean,
here you go. Listen to me. Okay,
to
listen
score
to me.
Points.
I'm not trying to score any points. The fact of the matter is the unemployment rate actual in America is about 10% if you look at the U6 numbers, which is people that are underemployed, people that are not making ends meet very well. And that changed during the 42nd president's term in office. It's easily documentable. It's easy to find online, and you can raise your voice and try to talk over me. But the facts are the facts, sir. Nobody really believes that the unemployment rate in America is 4.9% that actually works out there.
Well, let me ask you a question then. Since you seem to know the facts, where did you get your economics degree?
Oh, I see. I'm not allowed to have an opinion on the economy because I don't have an economics degree.
No. Just I did. You can have an opinion on the economy, but you can't tell me or tell anybody that you know how the data is put together when you don't know anything about how the data is put together, and your source are either a bunch of politicians who know even less and are trying to score points, or goofball things you can read on the Internet that anybody can read on the Internet. The truth is go to the data source and look at how it's done and look at how it's been done for years. Now, the truth is that is the truth. You can have an opinion as to whether or not the economy is good or bad. That's an opinion. But how the data is put together and is a fact. And that's something that anybody who knows anything about the data can go and look at it and see how it's put together and see that it's been consistent for years.
Well, I can
minor changes
here,
that aren't.
Here's one of these goofy sources. Here's one of these goofy sources. I understand you have an anger management issue. That's okay. But here, listen to me, Don. There's a Department of Labor document from 1994 that outlines exactly what I'm saying. You can get all heated and you can try to call me names and ask me where my economics degree is from. But I'll tell you what I can do, Don. I can read.
All right. What? Send me. You got my website. Send me the website that links to this document, and then we will have a debate as to whether or not that is a significant change or not. And if you don't send it to me and I don't hear from you, then we'll assume that you haven't been able to read it correctly.
But you'll have it within 30 seconds. It'll be it'll be emailed to you
I'm
in 30
glad
seconds,
you've got
Don.
Something. And now, it's going to be from the Department of Labor, not some crazy Internet site, right?
That's correct. It's from the Department of Labor, from the United States government, from 1994. Would that be adequate to you, Don?
Still waiting.
Well, it'll be right there, my friend. Don't worry. We'll take care of it. And we'll explain to you the U6 numbers that are cited by a lot of folks as being the actual unemployment number. Nobody in the world believes with 90 million people out of work, Don, that our unemployment rate is magically at 4.8%. That's absurd. You can do basic math, right, Don?
I'm still waiting.
Okay. Don, we'll send it along. We'll send it along. It's on its way. Get off air with Alex. Give him your email. We'll have it there immediately. All right? And
you guys have then you my can, email. Then you can, that's how you contacted me and asked me to appear on this nutcase show.
Oh, nutcase show. I see, because we don't part and parcel accept your nonsense. I see. Don't worry, Don. We'll send it to you. We'll have you back tomorrow. We'll see if you're man enough to apologize. Deal? Deal. Don Grimes somehow became a senior research specialist at the University of Michigan's Institute for Research and Labor. He thinks 85 million people out of work equates to 4.9% unemployment. We'll get that Department of Labor PDF sent over to him immediately, and we will post it on the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page for you to review, because that's what we do. Thanks for playing. 888-900-9966 if you want to check in.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
You know, this isn't even going to be heavy lifting for me. I'm sorry, Don Grimes had some anger management issues there when called out on what is true. In the mid-1990s, the way we used to measure unemployment was a U6 number that counted those that are unemployed and those that are grossly underemployed. In fact, if you work 1 hour a week now and make more than $20, you're not considered unemployed. Did you know that? People that are partially employed and are barely making enough to do much of anything are not considered unemployed. I mean, basic math is basic math, my friends. When 85 or 90 million Americans are not participating in the workforce, you can do the simple math yourself. The unemployment rate is not 4.9%. And yes, we did change the way we counted unemployment. Remember what the unemployment numbers were when Jimmy Carter was president? Do you remember in the mid-teens? That's because they used U6 numbers. Well, and I say Bill Clinton started it, but it's not like it hasn't been embraced by Republicans too, because it benefits any politician, because the U3 numbers, which count a much smaller group of people, if you will, as being unemployed, it benefits all politicians, Republicans and Democrats. It just happened to start when William Jefferson Clinton was in office in the mid-1990s. And yes, we do have a Department of Labor PDF file to explain to Mr. Grimes, who ought to lay off the coffee, that he's wrong, and that's okay. We don't mind. Glenn is on the line in Dansville right now. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Morning, Steve. I just wanted to thank you for inviting these people on and reminding us that the world is full of these mindless bureaucrats and sycophants that do nothing but spin numbers and make everything look happy.
And I thought, wait a second. I thought this was a nutball radio show. What did he call it?
Yeah, exactly. And thus concludes the comedy portion of the show, right? I remember back in the era when a strong economy added 400,000 jobs a month.
That's right.
Now, when there's 175,000 new jobs, it's fantastic. The news is great. And this is part of that new normal, I think, that everybody wants.
And that's the point.
Which is less than stellar.
And that's the point. And Glenn, let me underscore the point here, though. Bill Clinton may have been the guy who, his administration made the change to start counting U3 as the unemployment numbers and ignoring the U6 numbers, which today, by the way, are at like 9.9%. The funny thing is about our liberal friend from Ann Arbor there is that Bernie Sanders, at least, is brave enough to tell the truth about the same thing. The most radical leftist in the entire presidential race right now says the unemployment numbers should be counted by U6 numbers, which is 9.9%. Even Bernie Sanders gets it. But this guy, you know, wants to call me a nutball or call me names or whatever. That's fine. The great thing is we have a terrific research department. We're going to find that exact document. It's actually from we have one correction. It was not from 1994. The document, the PDF from the Department of Labor, is from 1995. We will be posting that information. If you look it up, it's everywhere, this information. Anyhow, Glenn, thank you for listening. Thanks for checking in. All right. After all that entertainment, let's put it into the passing gear and invite Michael Cannon from the Cato Institute. He is the Director of Health Policy Studies there. Michael, welcome to it. You arrived at an interesting time.
Like the old curse says, may you live in interesting times.
And we do. Yes, the last man began screaming at me, telling me that the U6 numbers mean nothing on unemployment. I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm a nutball for trying to point out the U6 numbers. I can live with that, Michael. At any rate, let's talk about Obamacare, another swimming success under this president. One set of rules for Congress, one set of rules for the rest of us. And I have said my entire life, you know, I'm sure I'm not the first guy, won't be the last. If a law gets passed by our Congress, it should apply equally to all citizens of the country, you and I included, but it doesn't work that way, does it?
Well, what President Obama has done with some help from the courts is repeatedly rewritten this law on the fly without Congress repeatedly spent money he has no authorization to spend, all in an effort to save this unpopular and unworkable health care law from political accountability. By political accountability, I mean Congress reopening the thing and maybe repealing it. If you recall, earlier this year, President Obama vetoed a bill that Congress passed repealing most of Obamacare. And so, and that's even with his best efforts to try to save it from itself by rewriting it to alter votes in Congress that otherwise would otherwise there would have been more votes repealing more of the law. And what we're talking about here is maybe the most egregious way that he has ignored the law, violated the law, and spent money without congressional authorization, because he's spending that unauthorized money on Congress. He's giving Congress contributions toward individual members of Congress and their staff, contributions of up to $12,000 each toward their health premiums, to which they are not entitled. Federal law authorizes the president to give them zero toward their health premiums, unlike all other federal workers. And the reason was, in order to blunt opposition to Obamacare when it was being passed, Harry Reid put in an amendment that says that members of Congress out of the health program for federal employees, which does provide, lawfully provides, premium contributions of up to $12,000 to members of Congress and their staff. But Harry Reid threw them out of the federal employees health benefits program and put them in the exchanges. It's in order for Congress to have to live under the same health care law that everyone else has to live under.
Which, of course, they don't. Well, here's the problem.
Well, you know what? They weren't special in this regard, because Obamacare threw lots of people out of their employer-sponsored insurance and left them to the exchanges. But what President Obama is doing, you know what? I'm going to keep giving them that $12,000 each, which, if you think about it...
Now, Michael, hold that thought right there. Hold that thought right there. I have to hold you through the break, because we got a late start on this, and I need to finish up your thought on this. If you can hold through the break, let's do that, okay?
No problem.
There you have it. Michael Cannon from the Cato Institute. All right, welcome back to it. We're up against it a little bit. Michael Cannon on the line from the Cato Institute, the Director of Health Policy Studies. And Michael, because of our late start, just want to make sure we got in your thought there. Go ahead and finish the thought you were working on about Obamacare, its failures, and where we go from here.
So President Obama doesn't have any authorization to give these $12,000 gifts to members of Congress, but he's doing it. And they look a lot like bribes, because they're influencing Congress's votes. They're keeping Congress from voting to reopen this law and reinstate their premium contributions. He's doing it because he knows that they would go farther than that, and that bill would have Democratic votes. And the way that he got them that money is he enrolled Congress in not the exchange for individuals, but the small business exchange that's restricted to small employers with fewer than 100 employees. Congress has thousands of employees. The law says that they are barred from participating in this small business exchange, but the president put them in that exchange so he could give them that gift, so he could keep them from voting to reopen Obamacare. It is as corrupt as anything the president has done to try to protect this law by going outside of the law.
Well, and yeah, once again, if everybody should be, the laws of America should all be applied equally. And next time you're here, Michael, I swear you'll get more time and you won't have to get a pinch like that, and we'll give you a little more time. Michael, I do appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, Michael Cannon from the Cato Institute here on the Steve Gruber Show. Here's what I'm doing to help you out. And by the way, you know what's great about America? And this is what our previous guest, Don Grimes, outlined for me. My mother used to say the greatest thing about free speech is not that I can say anything, is that you can let everybody else talk. And when you hear something really stupid, you can say, I don't want to think like that person or act like that person. That's the beauty of free speech. People can say the dumbest things they want, and everybody else can sit around and go, oh, does that guy really believe that? I mean, does he believe talking over me and yelling at me and calling calling me names and so forth? Does that advance his position? Is that the way it works for him at the University of Michigan? Apparently. Odd. I'll give you that. Anyhow, hey, let's do it again tomorrow on Free for All Friday. It's Earth Day, everybody. It's Earth Day ribs, chicken, and drink specials. God bless America. We'll talk then. It's the Steve Gerber Show.